Ladies and gentlemen, don't call it a don't you dare call it a comeback, because in fact, we've been here for years. We've just been away. Welcome back into the Wrestling with Wrestling podcast. I am your host, Matthew Glaze. I am joined by the greatest tag team partner of all time, Greg Alexander. Greg, how in the world are you doing, my man?
Oh my God, we have been away from this thing forever. If you have not missed us, continue to miss us, because guess what? Matthew Glaze is a brand new daddy.
I say brand new at this point. It's all, the new is almost worn off. I have had the greatest joy in my life of having a son. He was born in September this past year. His name is Levi. He is a healthy, happy baby. He is actually at this point, Greg, this is how long I am no longer a new dad. He is learning how to crawl this week and starting to put it together. And it's, I got to tell you, like, it's stupid how every single little developmental thing that he learns just makes me want to go sit in the corner and cry. I'm just so proud of him. Like, he figured out how to take one toy in one hand and put it in the other hand. I was like, I'm just so proud of him. I don't know what. So that's my boy. You're my boy, Levi. So yeah. So I'm a dad now, and wifey is doing great. She's an incredible mom, as I knew she would be, but even more so than I thought she could be. And so she's incredible. He's doing great. I'm just trying to get by, but also been watching some of the wrestling, watching some of the graps, as they say, Greg. But Greg, how is fatherhood going for you too? Because if listeners don't know, you also have a daughter and a son. So you're looking further ahead.
I have a 7-year-old and a 4-year-old, and we have been stupid busy. So if you're not familiar with us, during football season, we do cheer and baseball. And now this season, we are now doing soccer and baseball. And also, I am coaching T-ball, which has got to be the hardest thing I've probably done. It's really awesome to do, but it's also one of the most frustrating things. I have to teach 13 little kids on how to play T-ball.
Greg, what is harder about being a T-ball coach? Is it teaching little kids the fundamentals of baseball, or is it teaching parents the fundamentals of being a decent fan in the crowd?
You know, I've got to give it up to our parents. They're the probably the best parents that that I've ran into. But I've got to say, it's got to be teaching right now the fundamentals, because the fundamentals work. We just get the kids to first base and the home base and home. And then also, it's like whenever we're fielding, it's like we're chasing around cats. So that's all we're doing.
Well, it sounds like from everything I've heard about T-ball, you're doing exactly how you did. So shout out to those parents, by the way, too. Yeah. Keep up the tradition of being the good parents. Let's change the narrative on what it means to be a parent for Little League, because I know we could certainly work on that. But Greg, this is not, as much as we could sit here and talk about being parents for a long time, this is not a parenting podcast, because Lord knows you don't need our advice on how to be a better parent. You're probably doing just fine at home. This is actually a wrestling podcast, believe it or not. So, Greg, I've thought about the fact that we've been away for a little bit. You know, we've been doing some stuff. We've been busy, had some other things taking our attention. Greg has been getting the T-ball stand set up. Matt has been learning how to change diapers all this time. And so we haven't talked a lot about wrestling in recent months. And quite frankly, some massive things have happened in the wrestling landscape since the last time you and I talked. Like, the last time you and I talked was right after SummerSlam 2023, a great show. But man, there was so much coming down the road that we didn't foresee that has just been incredible. So, Greg, in the words of the current WWE Universal Heavyweight Champion, what do you want to talk about?
Man, we can talk about anything. We can talk about Vince McMahon. We can talk about Bray Wyatt. What's coming up? We got the draft, WrestleMania, King of the Ring, Bloodline story that continues on.
Oh, Greg, there's so many things. I'll tell you what, let's start with undoubtedly the biggest domino. Just to give you a recap, listener, if you haven't been tuned into wrestling in the past year, you've missed some stuff. Believe it or not, Vincent Kennedy McMahon, the man who stole a company from his father some, golly, Greg, at this point, 40 plus years ago, turned it into a billion-dollar company that sold to Endeavor for billions.
TKO.
That's the new TKO group sold to Endeavor right after WrestleMania. It was announced last year after WrestleMania 39. The massive sell to TKO or to Endeavor, now forming TKO in the partnership with UFC. And we thought to ourselves, like, man, Vince did it. Like, Vince chose his own narrative. He closed out his story. Like, what an incredible run for this guy. There was word about, like, is Vince back in the fold? Because we talked about WrestleMania last year, how things got really weird and people said, oh, Vince kind of came in and changed a lot of things at the last minute. The rest of that year was all a bunch of, like, who really has the power? Like, is Vince still kind of playing the role? Is Hunter really in charge? And Greg, in January, everything hits the fan. A salacious news article comes out with a woman accusing Vince of some of the most just deplorable things I've ever heard of in my life. Had to get a sip of water, excuse me, listener. We're talking about Greg, accusations of sex trafficking, sexual assault, obviously. Just wicked stuff. Things that, honest, if we're being honest with ourselves, we unfortunately were not surprised that Vince McMahon had these type of allegations against him. No one, I think, with a level-headed understanding of the wrestling of worldwide wrestling entertainment, or yeah, you know what I'm trying to say, World Wrestling Entertainment. None of them thought that Vince McMahon was an angel by any stretch of the imagination, but I don't think we realized the depths of his depravity until we started reading. If you've read the litigation and the accusations that have been legally put against him in court. Which now, of course, at this time in life, he is claiming that this is a violation of NDA that he set up with her. Of course, that was the original issue, that maybe he had used company money to pay for that NDA. So right on the tippy toes of Royal Rumble, Slim Jim, the moral integrity compass of the Western culture, Slim Jim said, we will pull our sponsorship of WWE and the Royal Rumble unless Vince McMahon is gone from the company. So what happens? Vince McMahon officially resigns. I think at this point he's actually sold quite a bit of his shares of TKO. I think probably that's going to be helped to pay for legal fees at this point. But Vince McMahon is 1,000% no longer involved in WWE and the operations in the day-to-day. Triple H is fully the chief creative officer of WWE. This year at WrestleMania was a big push to say this is a new era, the Paul Levesque era of WWE. And so, Greg, how in the world do you feel about the fact that WWE, for the first time in 40 years, does not have Vince McMahon's name attached to it?
You know, I know we've been going, I know there's always some sort of storyline where, you know, Vince McMahon was a part of WWE and he wasn't part of WWE and then he was fired and now finally, you know, for real, he's fired. But, you know, I think we're going in the right direction. And from everything from the Attitude Era, where it was really, everything felt like really sexual between, you know, the girls having bra and panties matches and having divas, which, I mean, I understand that, you know, the divas, there's some women that they still want to be divas. That's up to them.
It was the culture of the time at that
point.
Yeah,
that was the culture of the time. But I think we're making a huge shift in women's wrestling. Mm-hmm. And after that one woman came forward, I mean, just you had a lot of women coming forward and telling the same story.
Yeah.
that was just like her story. And that's super exciting to hear. That, you know, finally we're moving in the correct direction where we need to go.
I think the most important thing, Greg, honestly, is at the end of the day, you want the truth to be exposed for the sake of the survivors, of people who have been assaulted by Vince and by people that have been in Vince's circle. You want the truth to reign free because at the end of the day, like, I think we all need to hear the truth on what's really happening. Mm-hmm. As dark and twisted as it may be, it's better to have the truth and know than to continue to allow a monster like that to have free reign in the shadows. So,
I'm sure if the story's good enough, it'll probably be a Netflix documentary. No,
you know what? It might just be that. Speaking of it, you know, Netflix does have a good partnership with WWE now. Maybe they do an expose documentary on Vince. And that could be very interesting to see what happens there. But I think overall, I think you're right, Greg. This, all of this is a step in the right direction. You know, I watch wrestling occasionally with my wife, and she's not very into wrestling. She's become much more aware of it since obviously being with me. And she entertains me sometimes and watches the show. And I think even she has noticed a difference in the quality of the product since then, since from the time that she, you know, she started watching with me first in probably about 2017, some of kind of the real low points of the Vince McMahon era. Up until now, obviously, most recently, the past WrestleMania. And I think she senses something different about it. She always was like, I just don't like Vince. I don't get a good feeling about him.
Yeah.
And all these kind of things. You know, you look at Paul, Triple H, and you think to yourself, like, he just strikes you as a dude who's just a dad. Like, he's a guy who loves wrestling, who has this, like, real sense of, like, care for the wrestlers. You think about the way they've reduced house shows under his era, how they're not traveling as much. All these things are very family friendly, which I think speak to the fact that, like, Paul was a guy who had to run these roads. Like, he knows the wear and tear on your body, but also the wear and tear on your mind and your family and your relationships. You know, that's stupid age old adage of, like, you can get in the wrestling business to make money or to make friends, but you can't make both of them. I think he's going to make a real push to kind of change that, to say, like, look, like, yes, you can be incredibly successful here. They can turn you into a super duper star if everything goes right. But you can also, like, you can have a family. You can be a quote unquote normal human being with, you know, a fulfilled life in many areas of your life. And at the end of the day, why would you not want that for your professionals that you employ, the people that you're asking so much of? Why would you not want to give them the best environment to succeed? So I'm just over the moon excited for this new era, even though they keep talking about it all the time. It's become kind of a buzzword, but I'm thrilled for it, and I can't wait to see how it grows.
Yeah, and the spots are looking different too, because, I mean, back in the Attitude Era and the I'm guessing that we're calling what, the Hulk Hogan, and, you know, I think that's the golden era of wrestling. Yeah, golden age era. You know, you're talking about the wear and tear on your body. What about, you know, superstar, their safety? I mean, because, nowadays spots are looking way different. If a wrestler actually gets hurt, and I'm seeing them, okay, get that person out of here, do a quick cover, and, you know, just don't keep going. And it's okay to take time off.
Yeah.
If you need to, you don't have to play hurt.
Yeah, I think that's a huge thing. If you can create an environment that, you know, there's a fine line between, like, creating a competitive environment that's healthy and creating a competitive environment that's toxic. And so, like, yes, you want everybody in that locker room to be thinking at some level, like, I want to be the biggest star here. Like, I want to be the top guy or the top girl in this company. But when it comes to the point of saying, like, I want to be the top guy, I want to be the top girl, and I got to, like, hold on through this knee injury so that I don't lose my spot to somebody else who's chomping at my heels, like, that's not healthy for anybody. And that's been the story of wrestling for so long. And I think that's something else that we'll see, kind of, like, you know, we have better writers involved now. We have people that are telling better long-term stories. Like, you know, Rhea Ripley just announced 2 weeks ago on Raw that she had a shoulder arm related injury, and she has to take off. And I gotta tell you, like, I'm more excited for the Rhea Ripley return than I was for anything Rhea had coming up right now, just because I felt like her story had gotten a little stale. But, like, the Rhea Ripley revenge tour that's going to happen when she comes back, can't wait for that, man. That's going to be incredible. And that speaks to, like, you're safe in the company now. I think
she's a monster superstar right now, and can't wait for her to return.
Well, Greg, speaking of monsters, I'm just going to let you have the floor on this one. One of the more sad things that happened while we were away was the passing of Wyndham Rotunda, a.k.a. Bray Wyatt. He passed, I think, believed due to some COVID-related heart issues. If you haven't watched already, there's a fantastic documentary on Peacock that's mostly narrated by his brother, who plays the character Bo Dallas in professional wrestling. It's a fantastic documentary that tells his story really, really well, and I encourage you to watch it. But Greg, Bray the character of Bray Wyatt meant so much to you as a wrestling fan. So I just want you to talk about, like, how have you been processing Bray passing? How has that affected you? And kind of where are you at right now?
Yeah. So, I mean, right now, so whenever Bray passed away, I was at work and celebrating a Kobe Day, probably about one of the best days we can have. And then Bray Wyatt just, I mean, my wife, she texts me and then tells me Bray Wyatt passed away. And I'm just like, yeah, right. And, you know, of course, we've been having a lot of celebrities, you know, say, oh, well, the celebrity passed away. And it's like, you look it up. No, they didn't. And that's the first thing I did was look it up. And there was probably about 20 reliable sources that said that he passed away. And I was like, oh, my God, like that's, and it was so sudden. And I'm like, what the heck what is going on? Like, did something like major happen? Did he, you know, did he get, you know, hit by a car? Did he have a car wreck? What? No, it was, he had a COVID related heart attack. Mm-hmm. And, the doctor issued him a vest to wear to shock him while he was sleeping. He went and took a nap and did not wake up. So, I mean, just for his wife to find him like that is probably one of the saddest things. And I watched the documentary on him, and I'm going to have to say, this is the like first time I've probably ever cried during like for a wrestler, because he meant so much to the business, and he changed a lot of stuff and kind of introduced long drawn out storylines and how they work, and his mind just worked just different from everyone else's. And he was able to tell a story like that was very enticing to us wrestling fans. It's so sad for, you know, for us to lose someone like that.
It really is. And it's one of those things that you think about even now, and it still doesn't necessarily feel real that he actually is gone.
Yeah.
So sudden, such a young life at that point, seemed to have really been kind of getting his life on track too.
Yeah.
With some of the things that he was dealing with mentally and emotionally. It's just,
and so I'm sure part of that played with Vince as well. I mean, him and Vince, you know, they did get along, but there was just sometimes, you know, Bray Wyatt, it's his ideas they're just so out there that a lot of people, they couldn't get on board with, you know, with where he was going with it and trying to, you know, pull the reins back. And it's interesting to see someone like that just leave us, and just to see someone like that work. I've yet to see it myself, but, you know, I would love to see someone just work like that one day and just, you know, where are you going with this? And we did lose a good one.
We did. I mean, even think about, like, I would have been excited if Bray had never wrestled again, if he could have just become like even a writer or a producer within the company. He probably could have done some incredible things even in that role, all like a guy like Jason Jordan or Tyson Kidd, and the way that they've changed their career since the terrible injury. But yeah, I mean, Bray is a guy who he shattered so many paradigms of what it meant to be a wrestler. You know, body type. He was never a quote unquote like body guy. He wasn't a muscular freak. He wasn't a slender guy. You know, people talk a lot about how Daniel Bryan changed the perception of what it means to be a superstar. I think Bray is a guy who changed a lot of perception of what it means to be a superstar too, of like, yeah, he doesn't look like John Cena. He doesn't like Randy Orton. Frankly, nobody does. But man, few people could tell a story the way that Bray Wyatt could tell a story. I mean, really, like Dusty Rhodes levels of charisma. And I don't just say that because they're both like plump guys, like legitimately like makes you feel something when he's talking, makes you feel something when he's in the ring.
Yeah.
Makes you feel something when he's walking to the ring. Like, I think some of the things that I most took myself away of thinking, like, just wow, or I can't believe what I'm looking at, is just watching Bray Wyatt enter the arena sometimes. Like, think about the first time you saw the Fiend entrance at SummerSlam against Finn Balor years ago. And I just remember thinking, like, I watched the entrance and I paused the feed and was just like, I don't know what I've just seen. Like, that was incredible. Like, the way it was shot and the way it was all thought out, the character design of it all. Like, it's
the build up to that character
yeah.
was so insane mm-hmm. that it was, I think it was a better build up than what The Undertaker's was.
I think so for sure too. I mean, I think The Undertaker grew into this great character over time. Mm-hmm. I think one of the biggest things that helped Undertaker was his longevity of like,
yeah,
he was just so consistent. But Ray was a guy who would just come out of nowhere and like just grab you by the throat and be like, look at this. And you mm-hmm. couldn't turn away.
Yeah.
Whether it was his like kind of cult leader early on, Wyatt family gimmick stuff, whether it was the Eater of Worlds and the things he did with Randy Orton during those days, yeah. eventually the Fiend character, the Bray Wyatt, the kind of Frankenstein or Jekyll and Hyde character he did. Mm-hmm. Even his most recent stuff. Now, I know like it's unfortunate that the last match we had to think about with Bray Wyatt is that glow in the dark match at Royal Rumble.
Yeah.
It just didn't come out well. You know, I think it was probably more of a thing that was about the sponsorship than it was the actual match. That's unfortunate.
Yeah. I think it was rushed and I don't know. That's one thing that does upset me. It's just like, you know, we had that match and it's just like, we never got to close the chapter on him. And it's you know, stuff like this happens all the time where it just comes out of nowhere. You know, death is, you know, inevitable and it's going to happen and it's going to come out of nowhere for anyone and everyone. And, mm-hmm. you know, you're never going to be able to close the chapter on something like that.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, it is it's unfortunate the way it ended. Mm-hmm. But I think it's one of those things of like, yeah, it happened that way. But to let that define that type of career would be short-sighted. There's mm-hmm. so many incredible things he did. And there's such a legacy that he's left on. I talked about yes. like the ability to tell, you know, dare I say, Greg, I don't know if they hadn't. Okay, how do I say this? I think that Bray Wyatt crawled so that Roman Reigns tribal chief could walk and run. Mm-hmm. Like that's that long-term story, that like long thought out methodical. I mean, we're still in the middle of the storyline in some ways for Roman, but like,
yeah,
I think Bray's ability to even get the company thinking in that direction mm-hmm. is a huge part of what helped to make the Roman character a reality.
Yeah.
So, yeah, man, and I know that so many people were affected by his passing. I mean, I don't think you were the only one who cried.
Yeah,
watching that documentary, it was a great job, and I'll be interested to see if they do anything with Bo coming mm-hmm. out of this, and maybe kind of setting him up to do like a, you know, taking up the mantle, so to speak, and running with it. Who knows?
Yeah. I mean, it was leading into that direction anyways, but we know for sure Bo Dallas was a part of that. And he did play the character of Uncle Howdy and
confirmed.
So yeah, confirmed. But what's to come and where is it going to be at right now? You know, we don't know. And I'm super excited and I'm here for it. And I love Bo Dallas and, you know, he's one of the guys, the underdogs that I've been rooting for this entire time. And I hope he's able to, dare I say, like a phoenix, rise from the ashes and be able to, you know, get the spot that he so definitely deserves.
I think you're right. Greg, speaking of spots definitely deserved, I was going to do it. I don't know if I can do it. Greg, finally, The Rock came back and he wasn't just a deadbeat dad who showed up mm-hmm. for a second to say hello. He stayed around and by golly, Greg, if he didn't just create some of the most captivating television on the road to WrestleMania this year, The Rock, dare I say, the MVP. I know that WrestleMania 40 was all about Cody Rhodes and finishing mm-hmm. his story. I can't cuss on this podcast, but if I would, I'd be like The Rock and say, F your story, Cody Rhodes. Because, Greg, The Rock killed it this WrestleMania season. He came back. He committed to it fully. Of course, he is on the board of TKO now, so he has a vested interest in seeing the company do well, which is great for us because, quite frankly, he's electrifying.
Yeah.
No pun intended. But he came back. We thought to steal Cody Rhodes' spot at WrestleMania. We thought that somehow The Rock had mind manipulated Cody Rhodes into giving him the golden opportunity to have the match that everyone thought they wanted, which was Roman and Rock, the match we thought we were going to get at WrestleMania 39. But we were going to get it at 40. It was going to be this great rewriting of history, because you think back all those years ago to Philly for the Royal Rumble, where Roman won the Rumble, got booed out of the building. The Rock came out, tried to save his heat. They ended up booing Roman and Rock in the ring because the Philly fans are ruthless. We were going to finally rewrite all of that. And then the We Want Cody crybaby started chanting. And next thing you know, The Rock puts on a vest. He puts on some sunglasses. He puts on a gold chain. And the man becomes a final boss living god at that point, Greg. And it proceeds to give us some of the most entertaining television over the months-long build-up to WrestleMania. I mean, Greg, when he beat Cody, like Cody stole something from him out in the rain. And I swear, I swear, I thought Rock was going to kill Cody by throwing him over that ledge down to the parking garage. I thought the WrestleMania story was going to be that The Rock is wanted for murder.
This is going off the rails.
Like, I don't know if the steroids just got to The Rock's brain or what it was. But Greg, I'm going to ask you this question to get you started here. WrestleMania 40 was obviously a big show, and it was going to be a big show regardless. Did The Rock make it the greatest WrestleMania of all time?
I think he elevated it. For 40, there's so many WrestleManias out there, but I think 40 is
40 of them actually.
Yeah, 40 of them is number 40. I don't think he made it the greatest, but it was going to be a great show no matter what. I think he adds some elevation to Roman and Cody's match. And it's just, it added an extra little, you know, cherry on top on, here you go, here's The Rock. And it's like, he was definitely the golden cherry on top of that delicious Sunday that we got to watch.
Greg, I will say for sure, and I don't know if it was necessarily the greatest WrestleMania of all time too. I'd have to really think about that. There are some great ones there.
Yes.
But I will say, I think it's unquestionable that The Rock, on a business standpoint, made it more successful than it would have been had he not been there. You think about the number of sellouts they kept touting. I think it was like 18 or 19 sellouts leading up to WrestleMania. Mm-hmm. That's directly related to, I think, to The Rock and to his presence with these shows. Now, of course, he wasn't at every show, but there was something about the way that he elevated the product overall by his sheer, like, being in the same orbit as it. You know, he talked about one of his Instagram videos of, like, how wrestling is cool again because he made it cool again. And I think he's absolutely right. Like, as much as it is self-touting, where's the lie, you know? Like, Roman had been doing incredible storytelling before The Rock showed up. But he wasn't doing it at the level of attendance and viewership that he was once The Rock showed up again, too. And so I think for that reason, like, undoubtedly, The Rock had a tremendous impact on this WrestleMania. He did a great job in the match, too, I thought, on the tag team match. I was surprised with, like, how well he kept up with everybody. Obviously, The Rock has never been a great wrestler by any stretch of the imagination. Like, he's not you know, he's not Daniel Bryan or Seth Rollins or these people we would consider great workers, but he's an incredibly entertaining worker. And he did that throughout that entire match. His infatuation with Mama Rhodes and the way he was just almost flirting with her all the time.
Yeah.
Is incredible.
Like grabbing her like, hey, watch this. I'm about to beat your son to death.
That's right. my favorite was
this is how you punish your children.
That's right. Rock was teaching about how to not do soft parenting. Rock is not for soft parenting at all. If there's anything we learned this WrestleMania season, is that The Rock will whoop your butt in a moment's notice. Yeah. Like,
in front of your mama.
I wonder if he wears that belt around the house with his kids. Like, just let you know, like, he lifts up that shirt every now and then.
Yeah.
And just let you know, I put your blood on here too, boy, if you need it.
That's right.
But he did so much, man. And it was so great to see him really invest in this heel character, because The Rock has been doing this for a while. Like, you know, he comes back in, he dips in for a show, he makes fun of a mid-level heel, and then he gets a rock bottom on him, hits a people elbow, and calls it a day. The yeah. crowd goes home crazy. But like to see him really invest in this heel work
yeah.
was so great. I loved the way that he morphed his entrance over time with it too, and like mm-hmm. made it more and more epic every single time it seemed to come out. You could just, it just screamed like, it screamed that he cared, which I think is all we ever really want from The Rock, right? It's like,
yeah,
I just want you to say like you care about this as much as I do because you're incredible yeah. what you do.
just say you like it. Come on.
Like, just say you like us, okay? And I think you honestly could. You could say, without a shout out, like The Rock loves wrestling and he thinks it's great. And so I'm just so thankful for the fact that he committed so well to this build. And I'm interested mm-hmm. to see where it's going to go from here. You know, I don't think the story's over. You know, they had that really interesting moment on the Raw after Mania with The Rock and Cody where, you know, The Rock handed Cody something. And I don't think Cody's actually come out and said what it was just yet.
Yeah.
But it's going to be one of those little Easter eggs that we're going to hold on to until the next time we see Rock. I think we'll see Rock again fairly soon. Like, I think that SummerSlam mm-hmm. is probably the time we'll see him again.
Yeah,
I could be wrong, but I feel like it's close.
Yeah, I think what we'll get, I think we'll finally get Rock and Roman. Finally.
Eventually, I think we have to get there. Now, I do think that maybe that is a Mania match to put in the chamber.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes.
I think that's a, I don't think they haven't announced where Mania is going to be at next year. And I remember hearing one guy talk about this on another podcast of like, you could basically just do Rock Roman as a headline for its own pay-per-view mm-hmm. of like, just make it a separate thing. Like, don't make it a Crown Jewel. Don't make it a SummerSlam. Don't make it a Royal Rumble. Just say like the pay-per-view is called Rock versus Roman. It's going to yeah. be held on an island of Samoa. It's going to be held on the beachfront in a ring surrounded by all of the Fatu and Anoa'i family, and it's going to be a legitimate, like, somebody might die in this match. but it would be incredible. It would be yes. incredible. And I just want to say thank you, Rock, for all that you gave to us this WrestleMania season. And I hope that your next movie does incredibly well because you deserve it.
Well, it's probably going to be a Disney movie, so it's probably going to do real
well. I think it's actually Moana 2, which is going to be gangbusters. It's already set for $100 million, not $1 billion.
You're getting paid twice off of Moana?
Hey, man, what can he say except for you're welcome?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, hey, let's kind of get current here. We talked about some things that have happened in the past. There's a few things we want to talk about before we get out of here mm-hmm. that are coming up. The first one I want to talk about is the draft is coming up, and I have a hot take for you. I hate the draft. I hate it every year. I never think that they do as good of a job as they could with it, and I don't want to see it. What are your thoughts?
Same thing. It's always sloppily put together, mm-hmm. and there's no hype to it. They just yep. add it in. They go, and yep. you every year you forget about it. They're like, yep. oh, I'm in the draft. I'm going to be going. I don't even know where I'm going, to SmackDown or Raw. Where am I going? I don't know. And it's just like, okay, cool. Like the draft's never been cool, especially whenever they first had it. It's never been cool at all.
Here's what I hate. I hate one. It's not a real draft. Like tonight we're recording is the NFL draft is happening right now. Mm-hmm. College players are living their lifelong dream of going to a team. Many of the great ones going to a team that's terrible, so it's going to be a couple years for them. But they're about to get their life is about to change for the better, and it's this really beautiful moment that means so much, and it's been built up over the years to mean so much, and rightfully so. The WWE draft, as you said, Greg, does not mean anything. It happens every single year. It's arbitrary when it happens. It's like, oh, it's time to shake things up around here again. And so it's just dumb. Like if they would do a couple of things, Greg, one, set a consistent time where, you know, the draft's going to be, quite frankly, where it's at right now. Good timing. It should be right after WrestleMania. Mm-hmm. It should happen at this time. This is a good time to reset for a new season, you know?
But they always have it in a different, on a different, like different time of the year.
Yeah. That's the thing. It's like, just set a time. Like this is always the time. Like two mm-hmm. weeks after WrestleMania, we do the draft. And right. you know, every single year, that was an incredible WrestleMania. I can't wait to see what they're going to do to shake things up at the draft in 2 weeks' time. And we would just know. We would look forward to it. The second thing is that there's no stakes involved, you know?
Yeah.
Like, okay, you're going to get drafted to SmackDown. You're going to get drafted to Raw. Like, how do I know who won the draft other than like an arbitrary thing of like, oh, they have a really good show. I'm going to watch this show over here because my favorite wrestlers are on this show now. Like, it's just arbitrary. Like, I don't know if they'd ever do this, Greg, because it's probably too meta for them. But what if they started saying like, okay, this is the draft this year. Adam Pearce, you're over Raw. Nick Aldis, you're over SmackDown as a GM. I like the fact that we actually have GMs this year. That feels a lot better to it. Okay, you're going to draft your stars to your roster. And then over the next calendar year leading up to WrestleMania, we're going to track every single week what your viewership numbers are. Or like what your attendance numbers are to your show. Like just something like legitimate to say like, oh, Nick Aldis drafted a much better squad to SmackDown because his numbers are through the roof in comparison to Raw right now. They would never do it because it would be self-sabotaging to their own company. Mm-hmm. Like they're not going to say that SmackDown's killing it versus Raw and the ratings or vice versa. But there needs to be some kind of quantifiable way that I can say like, oh, SmackDown won the draft this year. Our Raw won the draft this year. Like they did better. And I don't know what that looks like exactly to be able to kind of figure that out, but there needs to be something at stake there for them. Whether it's like the main event spot at WrestleMania goes to the show that had the better year or whatever it may be.
Yeah.
Just something tangible that I could sink my teeth into and care about as a viewer for the reason why we do the draft. And then the other thing is like, I hate how they make up the rules about like, is this team like, can you draft this as a team or do you draft these as individuals? Can the champions move on the shows? Like, how does that all work? And they seem to do it differently every single year. So there's no consistency to it. Like,
right.
My favorite thing about the draft is watching a tag team get broken up, like in a non-physical, like, hey man, I'm sorry. We got to go our separate ways here. Like, I love you, brother. We'll always be together. But we got to go our separate ways. Like, I would love that to happen to the Street Profits because then we could get Angelo Dawkins, Montez Ford to like finally have these singles careers we've been pushing for, but we don't get them.
And I think they did that the first couple of years that we had the draft.
They broke up the Dudley Boys. It was incredible.
That's the first thing I remember. They broke up the Dudley Boys where I can't remember. Was it Devon? I think Devon went over to
SmackDown.
SmackDown. Yeah. And that kind of shook things up. Whereas like Spike Dudley and Bubba were like, okay, so what do we do now?
Yeah, we're left. What do we do?
Yeah, we're left. We're, you know, and of course, Spike Dudley doesn't fit in unless they're in a three way tag match. So I mean, our triple threat tag match.
But it was great. Yeah, I think about like Edge and Christian getting broken up over the years. The Hardy Boys, like, and those guys go on to massive singles careers. In spite of the fact that they got broken up, like it's a great thing. And so like, I just wish it was consistent. I feel like if it did that, it could go a long way. And I feel like it could be better, but there's just some things they got to figure out about like how much are they going to invest in telling this story? Well, you talked about long-term story earlier, Bray, like this is a long-term story every single year of like, you got to figure out how to tell the story the right way. I think they can. I think they got smart people there. And I think the Triple H can figure it out. But I feel like, I don't know. I mean, I guess we can hold back reservation to say, like, let's just see how this plays out over Friday Night SmackDown and Raw of next week. But like, I don't really have high hopes for it.
Yeah, they haven't really put, you know, a huge stamp on the draft. They just kind of just brought it up and said, oh, hey, by the way, draft's coming up. And the only time they mention it is just whenever they're just talking about the draft, not like, the superstars going, man, I don't really know where I'm going. I don't know. Am I going to stay here? Am I going to stay on Raw? Or, you know, what am I going to do? But that's the only time they've been talking about it. It's when they bring it up.
Back in the day, like when they first did it and, you know, like Vince drafted The Rock to SmackDown. Mm-hmm. And it was a storyline because The Rock hated Vince. And he came out there and said, like, how dare you draft me away from Raw? Like, I love being on Raw. Like, those are the kind of things that could be storylines you could work into this. Like if somebody hated Nick Aldis and be like, whatever you do, don't you dare draft me. I'm gonna make your life hell if you draft me over there.
Mm-hmm.
And they like just something like that. It's all we need. It's not rocket science, Greg. But you know what I am excited for?
Is King of the Ring.
Return of the King of the Ring, Greg. And let me tell you why I'm excited for it. Greg, I've come to a personal revelation during my time away from the Wrestling with Wrestling podcast. Gunther is freaking incredible. Mm-hmm. And I love everything about what that man does when it comes to professional wrestling. I love his entrance. I love the way he just chops the heck out of people over and over again till they cry in a puddle of their own blood. I love the way that he's dominant as a champion, even though, of course, he lost to WrestleMania. Big shout out to Sami Zayn. Great match. But, Greg, the fact that this man is about to become the King of the Ring, and you can't tell me otherwise, this man is destined to have that crown on his perfectly chiseled jaw pretty soon here. And I can't wait for it, Greg. Tell me, who is going to beat Gunther at the King of the Ring?
I already called it. I watched Raw today because I got things to do on Monday. And watching him just boss around Ludwig Kaiser to beat up Giovanni, that's just, I was like, King of the Ring. He's got King of the Ring vibes already. Like,
the man's already a king, all right?
Yeah.
And quite frankly, King Gunther sounds like a legitimate king. Like, he sounds like he's a king somewhere over in the Baltic countries, like just killing people all day long. That's what he sounds like.
And he doesn't have to use a stupid voice because he's already got that German, scary German accent.
Right. He's incredible. And it's going to be fun. Now, I will say, I do think they need to figure out what it means to be King of the Ring and what it actually gets you. I liked it back in the day when I don't think it was ever really said, but I think it was always implied that, like, the King of the Ring winner got the main event heavyweight match at SummerSlam that year. Mm-hmm. Like, he was the one going to challenge. You think about when Brock Lesnar won it all those years ago in 2002, and he challenged The Rock for that first title run that he got there.
Yeah.
Like, that means something to it. And I think that would be great. Like, could you imagine if Gunther wins the King of the Ring, and the next thing you know, he gets the world heavyweight champion, whoever the non-Cody champion is, at SummerSlam, and now he's your new heavyweight champion over there. That's an incredible thing, and it would be super believable because, quite frankly, he already looks like he's ready for champion, like world heavyweight championship status in my mind too. So it'd be a crowning of the moment in more ways than one. Other people we know that are going to be in the tournament so far, we know that Xavier Woods is going to be in it. He's going to try to defend his crown. He's going to get chopped down like a sycamore tree. We know that Drew McIntyre is going to be in it. He's very upset about something. We know CM Punk is probably going to cost him, and then he's going to get chopped down like a sycamore tree as well. Maybe Sheamus will find his way into it if he finds a burger on the way, and he's going to work his way into it. He can get chopped down like a sycamore tree as well, because Gunther is chopping everyone down to the finals of the King of the Ring tournament, and Ludwig Kaiser is going to place that crown on his beautiful head and sing a song. And there's going to be a scepter. There's going to be a robe. There's going to be a crown. There's going to be a chair. He might make Ludwig Kaiser carry him in that chair by himself the entire time. And I'm here for every part of it, Greg, because is incredible.
Put him in the gondola and roll his butt down to the ring.
If that's not what they're doing the Monday after, I think it's a failure. Matter of fact, if they don't have Giovanni Benci carrying that man,
I don't know
what to tell you.
I think that's the only thing that makes sense right now is, you know, Gunther's gave up his Intercontinental Championship, and now what does he have to do next? Win the King of the Ring. Yep. So
he's the most logical pick.
Last time, the King of the Ring, it didn't mean anything. Like, we just had the match, and, you know, Xavier Woods was King of the Ring for a month. Because Roman beat him down and stole his crown.
Stomped on his crown, man.
Yeah, stomped on that crown. Like, he,
because I mean, quite frankly, how are you going to be a king when there's a tribal chief present? Okay, that's what I'm trying
to say. I know, right?
The disrespect by that man to think that he could come on the Island of Relevancy and be a king on the tribal chief's court. That's ridiculous.
Oh, speaking of the draft, that's another thing that they ruined. They brought Xavier Woods over to SmackDown because he won on Raw as King of the Ring. Mm-hmm. And I think we discussed this last year, whenever last time the King of the Ring was going on, and the draft, it didn't make any sense. Why would you send Xavier Woods over to SmackDown
to get beat, to get put in his place by our tribal chief? Still, shout out, acknowledge him, Greg.
Acknowledge him. I think Roman should have stole that crown and put it on top of his head and wore it for the rest until WrestleMania.
Who would have stopped him? Who would have stopped him?
I'm the king of the ring.
Right. I'm the king now. Acknowledge me.
I'm not even a king. I'm a tribal chief.
Okay, Roman, whatever you say. I guess we got to do it. Roman. Greg, speaking of Roman, he's been curiously absent since his loss at WrestleMania. Understandably so. The man just gave us the most incredible run as a champion of all time. He could take as much time off as he wants to. I'm not here to complain about that. Even though the crowd on SmackDown was chanting, "We want Roman," to which Solo Sikoa said, "Oh, now you want Roman?" Basically, it was what you saw him mouthing at the end of that. But Greg, in his absence, there has been a usurpery of the Tribal Chief moniker. And Solo Sikoa has decided to take it upon himself to be the new Tribal Chief. Maybe. It's not quite clear yet. He's playing very fast and loose with what's going on. But essentially, he beat Jimmy Uso within an inch of his life for the fact that Jimmy didn't come through at WrestleMania and couldn't beat the Yeet Mania champion and Jey Uso. Beat him down with the help of Tama Tonga, who Solo now refers to as his MFT, which I got to tell you, I spent a full 30 minutes on Twitter trying to search MFT, and I still have no idea what it means. I don't think anybody knows what it means. I think some people have some theories about what it means, but I can't say those on our non-explicit podcast that we do. So, Greg, what I want to know is, are you excited for the new bloodline, or are you like Paul Heyman, nervously shaking in the corner, just trying not to get beat up?
I really hope that they don't ruin this bloodline story the way that's going. I understand Roman taking time off, which he absolutely deserves. I'm sure he's going to be doing a movie or a commercial or something. I'm sure he's doing something to earn some sort of money.
Oh, for
but
sure.
Yeah, at this point, I really hope that they're not going to spoil this the bloodline storyline the way that it's going.
How I see it going so far is I see us setting a course for a very real bloodline civil war.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're right to worry, because okay, if the bloodline storyline is the equivalent of the NWO storyline back in the 90s and early 2000s, then the Solo bloodline kind of feels a little bit Wolfpacky to me of the NWO. And your mileage can vary on how much you thought that was a success. Most people don't really view it as such. They kind of view it as the point where they kind of jumped the shark and kind of lost the direction of the story. I'm gonna hold out optimism that they're going to figure it out and they're going to tell a good story, because they told a great story so far with the bloodline. I know they've thought about this for a while. I know, obviously, like ever since they figured out that Cody was going to be the one to take the title off of Roman, they've been figuring out, okay, what is next? And you have some of the greatest minds in professional wrestling thinking about this. Like, they're going to figure it out. I'm excited so far. I think that Solo has been compelling in ways that I didn't think that he could be. I know he's not a great talker. He, frankly, none of the non-Roman bloodline are good talkers. Like, Solo's not a great talker. Oh, of course, Paul Heyman, but he doesn't really count. Solo's not a good talker. Jimmy's not a good talker. Jay, I don't think, was ever a great talker. I still don't think Jay is a great promo. I think Jay's just so dang charismatic.
Yeah, I think he's getting there, but I don't think he can. He's not really great at promos, but he is, like you said, he is very charismatic, and he can get a decent promo out there.
I always think with Jay that Jay just gets way too hyped in the moment. Like, he can't keep his thoughts together. Like, you see him, like, almost like he's trying to search to remember what he's supposed to talk about, because he just got too worked up in the moment. And I get it. Like, I would probably be an over energized mess if I was standing in front of 18,000 people chanting.
Oh yeah. I'm sure you're bouncing 18,000 fans up and down.
It's easy to get worked up at that point.
Yeah.
When I have the power to put all white people on beat at the same time, that's an incredible power, Greg. I mean, that look,
Ohioans at that point.
Look, the church has been trying to do it for generations, and we ain't able to get white people on the same beat for, you know, thousands of years at this point. But Jey Uso is out here working miracles, so it's easy to get a little worked up at that point.
Yeah,
but But I say all that to say, like, I've been really surprised with the way that Solo has carried himself, and I think he's done better than I thought he was going to do. I like that they haven't let him say much. He's been much more about his action, which Solo always is. Like, say what you want about him, he makes it believable that he's kind of unhinged all the time. He's really good at that. And so I'm going to hold off on saying this is going to work or this is not going to work. I'm going to let it play out a little bit, Greg, if you'll allow me. And we'll see where it's going to go.
I think we have to.
Well, I mean, we really don't have another choice.
We're just on the ride.
we're just sitting here watching wrestling. You know, that's all they pay us to do, and they don't even pay us that well for that. But Greg, man, I think that kind of gets us where I want to get to tonight, man. It's a joy to be sitting back here talking wrestling with you.
It has been very enjoyable.
Thank you, Greg. It has been very enjoyable, hasn't it? I'm excited to see where this goes. It's a fun thing to try to balance now, watching wrestling with all the responsibilities of being a dad and being, you know, trying to be a good husband. And I know you've probably been feeling this for years. I'm just kind of filling this out now of like, I have to really consolidate my wrestling watching to a reasonable amount. And my wife thinks the reasonable amount is like probably 30 minutes to an hour a week is like a lot. So I have to be able to kind of do it quickly. And like
3-hour show,
my car rides to and from work and stuff. I have to kind of figure out how to fit it in there. So we're going to see how that goes. But I tell you what, I am going to enjoy it. I'm sure you're going to enjoy it. Listener, we hope you enjoy it too. Greg, until the next time we talk, how about you do me a solid? How about you keep wrestling with wrestling?
That's right. Keep wrestling with wrestling.
Deuces, we out of here.
Peace.